Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaveyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Shankya philosophy posits that the whole universe is evolved from the gunas. The state in which they are in their natural equilibrium is called prakriti. And when the balance is disturbed, they are said to be in vikriti, the heterogeneous state. The three gunas are said by the non-theistic Shankya philosophers to be the ultimate cause of all creation. Sattva is weightlessness and light, lagu. Raja is motion or activity, chalam. And tamas is heaviness, darkness, inertia or concealment, guru and avarana. So they're saying that that is the cause. So in one sense, yes, everything is created by the modes of nature. Everything is somehow or another under these modes of nature. So what we see that is going on is in some way connected to them. They're dealing with everything. Now, someone may be under the control of them. That means that how the modes dictate is how someone will behave. And then those who are spiritual are above the modes, means they themselves, their consciousness and their activities is not based on the modes. But it doesn't mean that whatever activity is performed is not controlled by the modes. Right? Because remember, we have the field of activity, the living entity desires to do an activity. Then that activity is sanctioned by the super soul, and then it is carried out by the modes of nature. You understand? But the difference is when it's being done in connection with the Lord, then that carrying out by the modes of nature isn't controlling you. It's actually assisting in service. But when you are not Krishna conscious, then not only do the modes dictate what you would naturally want to do, not that you're controlled, you still have free will, but you generally will go along with whatever's happening. But at the same time as those modes acting, then you're bound by karma because you claim you're the doer. But if you are not the doer, you're actually doing it for Krishna, then the modes of nature don't affect you, means there is no reaction for you. But it doesn't mean that the activity isn't going on by the modes. But what's left out here in the Shankya is the modes are the cause of what's happening. So they're not taking into consideration the super soul. They're not taking into consideration, you know, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kiradakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu, you know, Krishna, none of these things. So that's where then is the non-theistic, like that. Doesn't mean it's not based on the Veda. So it's not, it's agnostic. But it's not, not agnostic. What's the word? Astic, yes. They're astics because they believe in the authority of the Veda. But at the same time, we see here is that here they only take it to the point where they see the modes working. They don't understand beyond the modes, the super soul is working. So he's in control of the material energy, which then controls the modes. So he sanctions it, then Maya carries it out through the modes of nature. Right? So then they know that when these are all the modes are in perfect balance, then that is your prakriti. And then when it's out, it's vikriti. So the difficulty comes here is that we can see that what they're leaning towards is the perfect balance of the modes. And then everything will just disappear, and then you have no more problems. Right? You don't have to pay the mortgage, you don't have any yelling kids, nothing, right? So all you have to do is So it's like in Ayurveda, you have the three modes. When they're in balance, there's health. So there's taking, when the three modes are in balance, which are also the, basically the same thing. The modes are the doshas of the universe. So then everything becomes balanced. We catch what's happening here? Is up to a point, they're correct. After that point, that's where it goes wrong. Because ultimately, you have to see where does it end up. Right? What's your result? What's your goal? Then you can actually define what everything else is. You know what I'm saying? How do you say what rasa Krishna is in?
He's not in the rasa.
He's not in the rasa. He is rasa. But what rasa is he manifesting?
Five,
but at any one particular moment. It's the devotees he's dealing with. So that means when the devotee is the person who his attention is put upon, then it takes on that flavor. You understand? So you have to look at the end. Right? Then you can understand what is the nature of it. Is it spiritual or material? You see the end. So the problem is here, the end ends way before we actually get to the spiritual. That's the problem with all of these. They end a little too soon. So there isn't something beyond. So that means their end is within the material confines. Therefore, that's it. But within that, how the mechanics of the world work and this and that, then they do quite well. You can present so much aspects of the philosophy. Someone says something, we say it's not logical. We're using Gotama's Nyaya. But we're using it to establish Krishna. Therefore, we take it all the way to Krishna. Well, Gotama doesn't. He only gets up to the Brahman level at best. Right? Does this make sense?
And how much does the devotional process burn off or the goodness that is supposed to come?
How much does it burn off? Like the point is if you're conscious of Krishna, then you're not dealing with, it means, see, the modes, how do I say? The modes of nature with time, those two combined, this we'll get into in the Bhagavad Gita. That's in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita. That's karma. But if you're not acting under the modes, it means you're acting with time, but you're not acting in the modes, there's no karma. So it means you're not acting under the modes. So it's not for the purpose of goodness, passion, or ignorance that you're acting. You're acting to please Krishna. Therefore, it's not controlled by the modes. Right? When we say controlled, we mean it's not giving a mundane reaction according to the modes. It's giving a spiritual reaction. Does that make sense? So when you're performing devotional service, we become purified. In that purified state, then we choose not to act under the modes. See, you have to make the choice. Right? So that's why part of the process, you know, is the aspect of purification. Because when we're in the pure state, we won't act under the modes. Does that make sense? But so as long as we act under the modes, then there's going to be some element of reaction. You understand? So as we become purified, we stop acting within the modes. Then we become conscious of Krishna. Then there's no reaction. You understand? Why would there be a reaction? Because we still are identifying with the modes. So therefore, because we've done the work, we identify with the modes, a reaction will be there. Right? Because otherwise, how do we learn? If we don't act under the modes, why is there need of a reaction? A reaction is for education. Right? Means you get a bad reaction, then you know don't do those activities. You get a good reaction, then you know that's more proper activities. Right? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like with the training the animal. It does nice, it gets a pet or something to eat, and it does something wrong, it gets a whack. Right? So that's just what's going on. You know what I'm saying? So if you are already doing something for Krishna, what's the need of getting a material reward or material punishment? Because you're not doing anything, you're not acting within the material sphere. You're already acting within the sphere that the material modes are trying to get you to. Right? The material modes are trying to get you from improper activity to proper activity, and then from proper activity to devotional activity. So improper activity, then there's a bad reaction. So then we start doing good things, we see we get good reactions, so we work in that way. But even we get a good reaction, we see that there's still no satisfaction. Even you getting the best reaction is still not necessarily so wonderful. Right? So because of that, then we're willing to take up the devotional with full commitment. Does that make sense? In other words, we intellectually know that the devotional service is the highest. So therefore we are also then, you know, working within that. But sometimes our, let's say, emotional commitment, you know, may not be so determined, you know? But we know it's right, so we're trying to do. So when that emotional commitment there, then that's when we're really determined. You know what I'm saying? We're really committed. So they'll go on side by side. Right? Means we will be acting within the purview of devotional activities, but our commitment will be as much as our realization. Right? So when we give up working within the modes, then that commitment is complete. Then, you know, we don't need that reaction because our focus is already on Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why even everything goes perfect in devotional service materially, and we get all the facilities that we're looking for, still we'll find that's not where the satisfaction lies. You know what I'm saying? It lies in Krishna. Right? So that means we perform the activity, we get the results. So now we can move forward into Krishna consciousness, or be complacent with the results, be comfortable in the mode of goodness. Right? So that's why then more is explained in devotional service. Otherwise, the tendency will be we'll do everything right in that, we'll get all the nice results, but we'll get used to that, and then we'll just kind of like stay at that point. We won't go further, right? We won't apply ourselves more seriously, right? Because we think everything's going right, but the point is no, the results of your material results of your activities are going right. But the point is that is a medium for your Krishna consciousness. So if the Krishna consciousness is there, then we can say, yes, this is going very well. If it's not so much there, then we can say, well, you know, there's proper endeavor and there's all these things you're trying to do for Krishna and this and that. You're getting the result, but your focus is not completely on Krishna. So then one might get distracted by the results. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. Let's say, you plan some big project. You know, it's difficult to get it. And then the big project starts happening. Okay, now when the big project's happening, then there's so many other things coming up, so many other people involved. You have to involve yourself with all these other people. And then you may say, well, this is, you know, what is all this? Because when you're thinking a big project, you're not thinking of actually the endeavors that are in there. You're just thinking of the result, the observable. You know what I'm saying? So then you might be distracted, just disturbed by that. You know what I'm saying? Either proud, see so many things, so much result, or distracted that, you know, it's such a problem, such a headache to maintain such a big program. You understand? Because you're only simplistically thinking of the result, meaning that form that you can see of the big program. Right? You're not thinking of the endeavor that you'll have to do in the big program. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, as you're purified, since it's all work for Krishna, then it doesn't matter what's there. That's how we go beyond the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness you get, the mode of goodness then it doesn't like headache. It's not due to laziness. It's by not wanting to be involved in activities that have some connection with kind of mundanity. You know, other people's false egos, other people's, you know, ambitions and desires and all these things that are material. Right? you don't want to get involved or entangled in those. It's not that you're comfortable to work, you just don't want mundane problems. You understand? But transcendence means it doesn't matter, you're doing it for Krishna, so even if there's a mundane problem, still that solving that mundane problem means Krishna's work goes well. Does this make sense, these things? Yeah?
Is that okay?
Okay, yes.
Maharaja, person to that place is faith in the Vega, or understanding law of karma, reactions to previous birth. With their suffering, how much do they actually learn from that?
How much does a person who does not have faith in the Vedas or, you know, in the higher elements, their reactions to their sins, their suffering, how much they learn from it? Basically minimal. You know, it generally will take many, 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 many births before. So if they're going in the direction of sinful, they'll just get more and more sinful until they just can't handle it anymore. So that may take hundreds or thousands or millions of births. Then they'll turn around the other way. Then they'll start being pious until they get more and more and more pious till they're very nicely situated in, you know, the heavenly regions and stuff like that. Then they get attached to that kind of sense gratification. So now the problem is you're not performing any pious deeds to get anything, and it's running out. So then, therefore, when they come here, they want that degree of sense gratification, but they don't have the piety to uphold it, so then they'll start doing sinful activities to get that experience. You know what I'm saying? So basically, they don't learn anything, but, you know, they kind of learn in that they learn how to not, you know, it's like, how much does a dog learn by getting whacked with a newspaper? Okay, he learns not to pee on the rug. But that's about it. You know, he's not learning Vedanta or anything. You know, he's just, you know, he just doesn't do that. So with time, then the living entity learns certain things you don't do. You know? Does that make sense? But it's not that they've actually understood what's going on or God's laws or anything. They just know that if you do this, you know, it's a very inefficient way of observation. You know? So by hearing, that's the best. You hear from authority, if not by seeing, if not by experiencing. So then by going through that for so much time, then they, like intelligent people, observe that there's a problem. But the intelligent person has either heard it and applied it or seen it and applied it. But the third class intelligence means you had to go through it. And then over again and again and again, then you decide, okay, I have to do this. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that kind of, yeah. So it's not very efficient, but, you know, whatever it is keeps everybody busy. You know, you could say, so what's the use of it? But the point is it's the stubbornness of the living entity. It's not a problem with the law. The law is correct. So now should people not be punished for breaking the law, even though they don't learn? You know, it's just like that. If the criminal never learns from being punished, does that mean that we just leave him on the street and don't put him in jail? No, he stays in jail. You know, he gets, you know, how you say, 10 consecutive lifetime sentences, right? You know, so you know he's not going to be around to bother you like that. Does that make sense? The gunas are formless and omnipresent when in a state of equilibrium. Having completely given up the specific characteristics, when thus submerged in each other. In a state of imbalance, however, Raja is said to be in the center of sattva and tamas. And this results in creation because manifestation in itself is an action. Right, so it has to come from Rajagun. Action depends on motion and the force of activity. That is the very nature of Rajas. Right, it means that push, that drive to do something, that's Rajagun. Right, so that's what's then making things happen. So that can either be drive because you have a need, right? Or it can be drive because you want to please Krishna, right? So there's a need to please Krishna, or a need to please yourself, or a need to please someone who's important to you. But in any case, some drive will be there, right? There's something you want, therefore the motive passion comes up and then you act. Because just wanting it won't get it for you. You have to act. And so Sattva and Tamas are dependent on Raja to manifest themselves and thus produce pairs of opposites. Right? Because you can say this would be correct in one sense, because, how you say, only because you want to do something does then the material energy manifest the various forms according to your previous karma of what you'll get. So therefore the forms, that would be the tamas, you know, the dead matter that's there, what the field of activities that is there. And then your goals are based on your, if you don't perform the activity, you don't get the goal. Right? Of course, we know that you don't do activity if the goal is not there in the first place. Like that, you know, but here, there, means he's taking this particular thing, is that this mode of passion then is the central feature. We'll also state that this to be correct, but not in its, how you say, means Abhideya is the central feature. That's how we'll take it. Because with Abhideya, then you see is that because of that, then results are there. That increases the field, which means there's more goals you can get, so by the performance of the activity. So the activity itself is actually what makes everything. You have love for Krishna. How do you express it? Through activity. Right? Then that activity will be expressed in an environment. But the environment on its own without activity has no meaning. Right? So activity, the environment, therefore, is for activity. Right? The Dham is manifest for pastimes to take place. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Love for Krishna is expressed through performing activities in that plate, in that dham. Does that make sense? So it becomes the central feature. That's why in our deities, Govindaji, in Abhideya, is the main deity. Our main deity is Govindaji. Right? That's Rupa Goswami's deity. So that is the attraction of Krishna's qualities and all that, interacting with Krishna's qualities, is the pastimes that are manifest. The qualities then are expressed through pastimes. Right? You can appreciate them, but they actually are manifest in pastimes. Does this make sense? You know, we're establishing Abhideya as the central principle. Does this make some sense, or this is all like some foreign language? I don't know. In America, we say Greek. I'm not sure from where you come from, Chinese. What language you use. Chinese, okay, you know, something like that. Okay. Yeah. Then he's putting that. Rajas also depends on Sattva and Tamas. However, because activity cannot be accomplished without the object or medium through which it becomes activated, right? So in the same way is that, it goes the other, is that the mode of passion can't manifest unless there's a goal that you're trying to get, because the goal means, as we mentioned before, the cause and effect are connected, right? So you have something that you want, then that means the activity that you are performing has to be in line with that cause and effect connection. Right? So the field of activities, you can't perform an activity unless there's a field.
So the goal that we want is that sense of happiness that goodness gives?
That's there. That's there at the same time it can be also an object. The point of the object is that.
That would be tamas.
No, but if we're looking at it as a goal, we are going to look at, okay, I want to get, you know, I say, some clothes. Okay? So that's a goal. So because of that goal, we work. Now, why do we want those clothes? Right? That's what you're talking about, is that'll make us happy, or, you know, it's winter, we'll be warm, or whatever. But as soon as we get it, that happiness experienced, you know, that priority experience is happiness, but then the clothes become part of the field. Right, so the external form goes back to being part of sambandha. It becomes part of the field of activities. The experience stays where it is. The experience doesn't go back to there.
So somebody would be, let's say, like a Brahmana, they said that he's firmly established in the world of goodness. So how would be his consciousness in relation with these?
Means that you're doing things based, because goodness is technically, you can, how you put it together, goodness means if you're looking at time, goodness is in the present. Right? If you're looking at it in process, then goodness is the result. Right? So the point is his results are connected to the Shastra, they're connected to goodness. Right? And therefore, in his action, and he's working in the present in the mode of goodness. So he's conscious of the present, and he's acting according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
So in the sense of happiness will be more constant.
Yes, the sense of happiness will be constant, because he doesn't have anything outside of that. Right, because his point is satisfaction, not happiness. Right? Happiness means it has to come and go. To be happy, you have to be not happy. Satisfaction, there's no limit to there's no time frame on satisfaction. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to be dissatisfied then to be satisfied. You can be satisfied. Right? But happiness, material happiness is defined as removal of distress. So you first have to be distressed to become happy.
So to be firmly in the mode of goodness has to be at least a tinge of spirituality? I mean, like at least
a tinge of spirituality? Meaning the tinge of spirituality is the Veda. The Veda is meant to know Krishna. But they may be following the Veda for other purposes. So it'll be mixed with other modes. But they, as a lifestyle, will be situated in goodness. So they're getting the results of their activities. It's very pleasant. It's very nice for them. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't mean that they'll be ultimately satisfied. At some point, then they will see that all these things don't make one happy. Ultimately, you can't be happy, right? By even the nicest material arrangements. That's why then if you know God consciousness, then you go, then you understand, yes, nothing material, no matter how nice, is going to make me happy. So I have to focus more on Krishna. I have to do these activities for Krishna. Someone who doesn't know about God, then they're going to take it that the material, see, even I work very nice, the material energy gives me nothing, so I'll stop doing material activity and I will try to, you know, free myself from the material entanglement, which means extinguish their existence. You know what I'm saying? The point is they're extinguishing their existence. The Buddhists, the Mayavadis, they're extinguishing the existence. Right? Buddhists don't even say it doesn't even exist in the first place. It's an illusion to think that you exist in the first place. Or the Mayavadis will say you exist, but it's an illusion to think you exist separately from the Brahman. Right? Not a lot of difference between the two. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. In a state of manifestation, one guna dominates the other two, but they are never completely apart from each other or completely absent because they are continually reacting with one another. In other words, yasama, nabhide, and prayojana. Elements which would be carried out by the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, they're always interacting with each other. It's always going on. One will be prominent at the time. You can be, the field is the main prominence, or the activity is the main prominence, or the result is the main prominence. Like this. But at any time, all of them are there at every, like this. There's no time when they're separate. By the force of Raja, sattvic energy evolves with great speed. And its unitary energy becomes divided into numerous parts. At a certain stage, however, their velocity decreases, and they start to come closer and closer together. With this contraction in sattvic energy, tamas is naturally manifested, but at the same time another push of the active force Raja occurs also on tamas, and within the contraction a quick expansion occurs. Thus the gunas do constantly change their predominance over one another. Predominance of sattva over tamas and of tamas over sattva is always simultaneously in process. the conversion of each of them into one another is taking place at every moment. See, they're just looking at it from energy. So they're looking at the Brahman level of it. But the difficulty comes is that without the personal understanding, it's not understood, is that the element of goodness, once something is obtained by applying rajas on something, then you get so many variety. It's created. But once it's created, that turns back into the field. So here they're just taking it that there's so many separate things, then they start to go together again. Right? Which in one sense you can see in your consciousness. You're doing an activity, so many things unfold, so many things are happening, you're focusing on all these things. Then when you get the goal, they become one goal again. Right? And then they just become part of the field of activity. So therefore they go back into tamaguna. Like that, the field. So now it's just part of the field. But then, the mode of passion acting upon the field again, then all those things then separate apart again, and then you can get your different results. And then as they get, then they go back again. So it's just interesting how they, formulate it like that. So they're just showing the technicality of what's happening, because we've said, Srila Prabhupada's mentioned that prajumna is there, the desire for something. So you, when you perform the activity, you get the result. So you get the result is aniruddha. Then aniruddha moves back to prajumna, right? Because aniruddha is coming from prajumna, like that. And then again, by action, then again it expands, and then again goes back. So like that. So they're seeing this aspect. You remember is that their element is the masculine feminine principle. So all this interaction like that's going to be based on that. Right. Sattva and tamas have the appearance of being in opposition to each other because one is light and weightless and the other is dark and heavy. But these pairs actually cooperate in the process of manifestation and dissolution as things move from subtle to gross and from gross to subtle. The expansion of power stores up energy in some relatively subtle form, from which it manifests to form a new equilibrium. These points of relative equilibrium constitute certain stages in the evolutionary process. It might at first seem that there is constant conflict between the gunas, but this is not the case. They are in perfect cooperation during the process of manifestation, because it is through their constant interaction that the flow of cosmic and individual life continues. They are essentially different from, but interrelated with, one another, just as the oil, wick, and flame of a lamp work together to produce light. So the different gunas cooperate to produce the objects of the world. The gunas play the same role in one's body and mind as they do in the universe as a whole. As individuals, physical appearance is simply a manifestation of the gunas that has been brought about by consciousness. This intention of consciousness is to cause Prakriti to manifest, disturbs the state of equilibrium in Prakriti, thus causing the gunas to interact and manifest the universe. So now they're putting it back to our consciousness. Then is what is causing all this to happen. So Krishna in the Gita mentions that it's the jivas who are sustaining the universe, right? After saying that he's the controller of everything and he's manifesting it, jivas are the sustainer, because the universe is sustained because of the desire of the jiva. The jiva wants certain thing, therefore it's manifest. He doesn't want it, what's the need to manifest it? Right? But because there's unlimited jivas, then there's always... all things are being manifest. There's never a time that they're not, because there's always somebody who's, in chewing the chewed, it means you've chewed it, get tired, you spit it out. So when you spit it out, it's visible, and then people can go, wow, hey, check that out. And then they can pick it up and chew it, right? Like that. Yeah. So all these three modes work together. They're not working separately. And so in that working together, then everything is manifest. But what it's mentioning here is that constant of them working, expanding and then contracting, expanding and contracting. All those, they're more interacting, less interacting. That's all happening because of the material desire of the living entity. Now, they're only looking at that part. You notice here that they're leaving out the control of the Supreme Lord, the plan of the Supreme Lord. Right? this is the atheistic aspect, is that the living entity is his, by his desire set, because we want to be the controller. That's the whole idea of being here, right? They want to be happy. At some point, they got to bring out how you're going to become happy by all this, you know, how you say, convoluting philosophy here. So, but you can see underlying it is the control. That this, that because of our desire, right, like that, that disturbs the state of perfect balance within property, and therefore things become manifest, right? And so, yeah. But what they forget, don't see, is that that whole thing is a cycle that's controlled by the Lord. When He breathes out, then there's opportunity for the living entities to disrupt the equilibrium of the property and manifest the universe. But what they don't see in here is Krishna's primary creation, which cause, what's that principle of cause, and then Brahma's creation, subsequent creation. So there you have your cause and effect, but they don't attribute it to this. They're only looking at the modes of nature, because it's happening by the modes of nature.
And they don't see the secondary purpose to save us from that situation, right? Because
I mean, so far it doesn't seem to be. We'll see, you know, what is there. At some point, they'll probably point out that this is a problem. So therefore, if you stop that, then you'll get out of it. Generally, they always have some, you know, ending like that. But what doesn't make sense is that all this is going on. So now they would have to identify between the individual's manifestation of the universe and the collective manifestation. Because even if I stop desiring things, so therefore it stops the modes working. It's not that the modes aren't working because other living entities are desiring. You know, so that would mean that it would have to stop for us only. But it's not that the universe goes back into balance. It's just we stop unbalancing it. Otherwise, by here, it sounds like you'd have to put everything back. You'd have to go around and convince everybody to stop disturbing the universe, which might be tough, you know. The gunas are always changing or transforming into one another. This occurs in two ways. Virupaparini nama, change into a heterogeneous state, and sarupa parini nama, change into a homogeneous state. Okay. Sarupa parini nama, the first kind of transformation. Yes, looks like. Takes place when one of the gunas dominates the other two and begins the process of manifestation of a particular object. In other words, depending upon the need of the living entity, then their desire is going to be predominated by a particular mode. So therefore, that mode will be prominent in the manifestation of that effect, right? That object. Yeah, that would be viru. Parinama. Virupa parinama. Okay. This type of transformation or interaction of the gunas with each other is responsible for the manifestation of the world. Sarupa parinama, the other kind of transformation of the gunas, refers to that state in which the gunas change internally without disturbing each other. In this state, the gunas cannot produce anything because they neither oppose nor cooperate with one another. This type of change occurs in the balanced state of prakriti. In describing the process of involution, Shankya states that all gross elements dissolve into subtle elements, and finally they all dissolve into their origin, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Ultimately, these three gunas also come to a state of perfect balance called prakriti. When there remains no weight of tamas, no weightlessness of sattva, and no activity of raja, because the gunas no longer have a separate existence in the sense of predominance of any single attribute, this state, prakriti, cannot be perceived by one's ordinary perception. It can only be inferred. One can only imagine a state in which all of nature is balanced and there is no levity, no motion, no heaviness, no light, no darkness, no opposing forces. in which the imagination itself, being a product of the mind, is dissolved. Chankya philosophers describe this state as uncaused, unmanifested, eternal, all-pervading, devoid of effect-producing actions, without a second, independent and partless. Right? Qualities that I should be attributing to the Supreme Lord. But, you know, because it is Krishna's energy, there's a non-difference. So there will be a manifestation of this. But unfortunately, they won't be able to appreciate it. Because Prakriti is never experienced by the jiva. As soon as the jiva it comes into Prakriti, it immediately becomes Mahat. So the modes of nature are manifest. So there's never a time when the jiva actually experiences Prakriti. Right? Also here we see is this Prakriti seems to be a state of existence as opposed to, you know, actually, you know, just pradhan, just a mix of everything that's peaceful. So that also seems to be this state that they're trying to get to. You know, the state of like the what do you call it? The Buddhists have their state called Mu. Yeah, they call it Mu. Nothing. Nothing's happening. It's just, it's all nothing. Purusha, consciousness. As was previously stated, Shankya is a dualistic philosophy that acknowledges two aspects of reality, the unconscious principle, Prakriti, and conscious, Purusha, or the self. Each body contains a self, but the self is different from the body, senses, mind, and intellect. It is a conscious spirit, at once both the mere subject of knowledge and the object of knowledge. It is not merely a substance with the attribute of consciousness, but it is rather pure consciousness itself, a self-illuminated, unchanging, uncaused, all-pervading, eternal reality. Whatever is produced or is subject to change, death and decay belongs to Prakriti, or is evolutes, not to the self. It is ignorance to think of the self as body, senses, mind, or intellect. And it's through such ignorance that Purusha confuses itself with the objects of the world. Then it becomes caught up with the ever-flowing stream of changes and feels itself to be subject to pain and pleasure. Okay, so it's taking Prakriti as eternal, but the state of Prakriti then is even though it's same, uncaused, all-pervading, devoid, but it's unmanifested. While for the living entity, it's self-illuminated, right? So it's also unchanging, uncaused, all-pervading, eternal reality. So the other one is also eternal, right? But it's the state of Prakriti. So there's consciousness. But notice that neither of these, that they're not explaining where does Prakriti and where does the soul, where does this Purusha and Prakriti come from? That somehow or another is not some, I don't know why they don't even bother. You know, what is the source of it? But I guess they're just taking it as the...
I mean, if you read the Vedas, it's full of descriptions of, you know, Vishnu and at least somebody.
Yeah, but you don't know how they take that. We'll have to see. Because they may take it. See, in the Veda, when you're dealing, most people, when they're worshipping Vishnu, if they're not coming in a Vaishnava Sampradaya, they're worshipping Vishnu in the mode of goodness. So he's the Lord of goodness, but basically he is the mode of goodness. So they're not actually dealing with transcendental Vishnu. So the Satyanarayan worship that is very dear to many, many Hindus, that's not worshipping transcendental Vishnu. Right? So that's how they can be Vishnu worshippers in that and still be Mayavadis.
Is there Lakshmi?
Well, Lakshmi is there, but that Lakshmi is Lakshmi what's got all the coinage. Right? So she technically is Indra's wife.
So 100 years of peace with a lot of money.
Like that. Yeah. That's what people are looking for, right? You know, throw in some control and hari bol. Okay. Shankya offers five arguments. Okay, no, that'll take some discussion. Okay, yeah, no, so that will continue tomorrow. No, Monday. Okay, so now we're coming closer to this element of the Purusha and Prakriti, or the masculine and feminine element. But because that is now we're going to get into it. Before they're just describing how Prakriti was functioning, right, and how the principle of transformation and all that, because that's important to note so that you can understand how the functioning is going on. But now we come to the more major, the bigger picture is that of the conscious self and Prakriti, the material energy. So the material energy and the living entity. Now what's going to be their interaction? Then they're going to...
Do we see it as having gender? Like
this Purusha being male, with female, or is it just two categories? The two are simultaneous. The two elements would have to be simultaneous. It means it would have to be, you're talking about the state of existence, but at the same time as there may be the masculine and feminine form. But those forms they would take are coming from Purusha, I mean Prakriti. But, you know, but the thing is there you're dealing with the interaction of the
they go as high as the jiva is still feminine.
But the jiva in polluted consciousness, is he feminine?
No.
He's masculine. Means by his attitude. That's why he's called Purusha. Like that. So they never get out of the material sphere, so therefore they can always call them Purusha. Is that exactly?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.